Backseat Producers, episode number 238, Car Wash.
This is Daryl.
And this is Tony.
Who are you?
God, where did you
come from? It's a good question.
Where did you come in from?
It's an excellent question.
It has been a while.
It has been.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
How is the ninjaing?
Well, as I was telling you guys offline, I was part of a very intense black op. It was we did a lot of good work, and unfortunately we didn't get the result we wanted, but nonetheless.
Did you lose any men?
You know, we're very fortunate to say we did not lose any men. Although the truth is, Tony, if we did, I'd never tell you. So I mean, we're just gonna have to leave that where it is.
But you did lose your innocence, though.
I lost my ninja innocence on this mission. Yes.
So welcome back. For those of you who have not, who are fairly new to the program. This is Tony number two. Sometimes we refer to him as Deuce. The other Tony from way back. We started this podcast together almost 6.5 years ago.
Yeah.
But let's go back a little farther and talk about car wash. But we'll do that in a minute. Actually, next week, we switched up the schedule a little bit. There was some illness and some other things going on. Plus, we realized that vacation probably wasn't a wise choice. There just isn't as much to talk about it. If we get a huge group of people together, some point we may talk about it. Because I mean, my God, who hasn't seen Vacation? But we're just going to pare it down. So next week we're going to talk about Stand By Me, and we're going to follow that up with Bad News Bears. Then I think we're going to put a fork in the summer movie theme.
Yep.
Because I'm about done talking about summer movies.
Yep. Then we'll move off to some other interesting stuff.
Yeah. I don't know what yet. Something. We'll figure something out.
Maybe we'll pick one of the more current ones or ones that have been coming out over the summer, one of the new first runs.
Yeah. We'll figure something out. We got a couple weeks before we really have to worry about that. And hopefully we'll be having Adam and Jill rejoining us soon
shortly.
As well.
As soon as the convention season ends.
Yeah, well, the convention season is going to be over for a little bit yet, but like this week
for them anyway.
Yeah, Adam is done with school, but now he is at Gen Con.
Yes,
so,
and we still have Dragon Con coming up too. And
if the tweets are any indication, he is badgering people and is drunk, which is par for the course at Gen Con.
Good.
So
he's having a good time.
Well, he's having the time he always has.
Mm-hmm. So. A good one, nonetheless.
So this week we're going to talk about Car Wash. 1976?
Right.
Is that right?
Yes, 76.
And just for the sake of posterity, we're going to play a game where Anthony pretends he has never seen the movie before. And he will ask the questions.
And the sad thing is, this is a movie I probably would have wanted to see. I mean, it's an old movie from the 70s. A lot of the great comedians are in it. And,
yeah, yeah.
It's a shame that I have to pretend I haven't seen it.
Right, right. It is a shame that you have to pretend. So,
and also keeps in with our theme of recently dead actors.
Which one?
Ivan Dixon.
Who's Ivan Dixon in this?
He's Lonnie. He's the more sensible one in the whole.
Okay.
Or tries to be the kind of like the big brother.
Right, right, right. I didn't really
He has a very interesting filmography, which we'll get into.
How long ago did he pass away?
He died in 2008.
Oh, okay. So not very
too terribly recently.
Not Horshack recent.
Right, but still, a lot of the actors who did appear in here have passed away in the last few years.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Lana is reminding us that he was on Hogan's Heroes.
Yes, he had a he was on Hogan's Heroes for 5 years, 130-some episodes.
Wow.
Which, for the 1960s, for a black actor to have a long-running role in a major TV series was pretty phenomenal. And there was an interesting story about why he left the show. To go with it, we'll get into... It will tie in somewhat to what we're going to be talking about in this movie.
All right. So, Daryl, what did you think?
Oh, boy. Going back and watching a 76 movie that has no plot and basically a very thin storyline was kind of rough, because you're sitting there watching the thing, waiting for something to happen here. It's kind of a little disorientating, kind of fall back into that mode. And we'll get into some other things about this movie later on, but how about yourself?
Yeah, I think the first thing I have to do is describe this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about this, and this movie is a... It's the best way I can describe it. It is a ghetto slice of life movie set in a car wash with no overarching plot.
Right. None. It's a series of...
It is just a slice of life. It's a day in the life
of a bunch of guys who work at the car wash.
Yeah, these guys who work at the car wash. And some of them are very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there really are some very interesting characters that you almost wish you could follow.
Around, yeah, get the full story. Yeah, there's a couple of storylines that just seem like go nowhere.
Right. Yeah, and then there's a couple of characters that are, you almost wish they had more story.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm blanking on all the character names now because saw this movie like a week and a half ago.
Well, the prostitute. You know, she's in there.
Yeah.
What is she running away? Who's she trying to get away from? And we kind of get this thin little line that she's trying to get a hold of this guy she met. But she kind of just, she's hanging around this car wash for a day, just kind of walking in and out of these guys' lives. But we really don't find much about her, you know. Why is she there? I mean, does she have a home? Or is she just a common streetwalker who has, you know, just comes and goes?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of the name of the guy who was the gay character.
Oh, Lorraine. The actor was, just a second here. He was a very unusual character in that he, for a gay guy in the 1970s who was pretty open, he was very open, and his coworkers seemed to be pretty down with that.
That was the coolest thing, was that you have this flamboyantly gay guy in the mid-70s, and a flamboyantly gay black man.
That's even more, yes.
Surrounded by other black men
who are very straight,
who are very straight, and like even at one point, some of them, one guy tries to give him some trouble and tease him about it.
Right,
the rest of the guys come to his defense,
He comes back swinging himself with a few classic lines too.
Yeah, that was awesome. Just that characterization was really really cool.
Oh, excuse me, his name was Lindy, and he was played by Antonio Fargas.
Yes.
Who has an interesting filmography in himself.
Right, right. I just thought that was really cool. This character was so openly gay in a time when...
Well, yeah,
we've
still
talked
being,
about it before.
Well, being open in even in L.A. in the 70s was, I guess, to be the way he is, would have been pretty, pretty bold. But he must be awful comfortable around these guys, you know, his coworkers, that he can do that. And to have an employer who is that pretty cool with that, too.
And those guys accepted him.
Mm-hmm.
Accepted him and defended him. And that was, I thought that was really awesome. Yeah, so I guess we can kind of pick apart some of the characters. Because, again, there's really not a plot.
No.
I mean,
it's all a series of just little character studies kind of loosely strung together. Which is one of this film's big weaknesses. In that, you know, you're just watching these little character studies go along and along and along. And, you know, films even at this time were pretty well structured. Just to throw them out there like that and kind of I wouldn't say it's a jumble.
Not that I've seen the film, but just for the sake of argument, in the 70s, there were quite a few films that were messing a lot with structure. I mean, we did Taxi Driver. We've done some films where a lot of, you know, and there were a lot of, like, experimental hippie films at that time.
Yeah, but
I'm not saying this is like that, but it doesn't necessarily, I don't know. I just think, I just thought maybe you might want to comment on, I wouldn't overlook the structure, I guess.
Well, yeah, it's like I say, it's an experiment. It's a very unusual film to be put out by a major studio. You could almost say it falls into blaxploitation movies. It really kind of doesn't. It kind of is in that era okay. of them.
It's in the era,
but it really isn't. It appeals to a mainstream audience.
Well, it was in the era of blaxploitation movies, and it featured some of the actors who were in blaxploitation movies. But I would not call this a blaxploitation movie.
No, it doesn't. It isn't.
It's really not.
I think you could almost say that it kind of comes very close to it, but it isn't.
No, I would say actually it's kind of a counter to blaxploitation movies, where the
blaxploitation movie plays up like tropes or certain cliches,
stereotypes.
Yeah, thank you.
Racial stereotypes.
Yeah.
They are racial stereotypes.
Although a lot of it was about
soul food, calling people brother.
Well,
and there was a lot of that though.
Well, but like Foxy Brown, for example, is more about revenge than it is about all of those stereotypes.
Or Shaft, which is strictly a detective,
you know,
a murder mystery action movie.
A lot of those things we think. I mean, in terms of the ideas of like the slang or that sort of thing, we think now it's like a stereotype, but back then it was cool.
No,
so
that was just
it was a little different.
That was just the
hip
lingo.
Yeah, yeah.
It really was.
So
Airplane makes fun of it.
Yes,
Airplane makes fun of it. Gray, excuse me, stewardess, I speak jive.
That's right.
But no, it's not like that. And really, the closest it ever comes, I think, to that is the scene where. It's a pretty gratuitous scene. It's the dancing while they're washing the car.
Mm-hmm.
And they're dancing and singing, and
right,
everybody's
the two,
got their...
The two brothers who have the showbiz aspirations, they're on the guys who handle the pre-washing steam guns.
Yes.
But, you know, for this kind of a job, you almost need to do something like that just to get through the mindless tedium.
Right. It's close to that, but it's the same kind of thing that you've seen done in other movies. And I tell you, it never dawned on me until I was watching it this time.
Mm-hmm.
You know who borrowed heavily from the themes and the way this movie was made? Kevin Smith in making Clerks.
Oh, okay.
And because
Slice of Life.
Slice of Life. Guys working at this place. The only connection they have is that they work there together, and it's the people that are coming in and out of the place that are the characters that enrich their lives, and that happens. Richard Pryor shows up, Big Daddy something or another.
He's Big Daddy Rich.
Big Daddy Rich. And it's Richard Pryor. He's an evangelical, rich evangelical preacher, and he comes in this limo. He comes out in these...
With his own entourage.
This entourage of beautiful women.
Who are the Pointer Sisters.
and it's just, I mean, he's this big, you know, big... Flashy, over the top guy,
And that's the tragedy is he's only in the movie for a few minutes. But when you look at the poster and the title and the credits, he's right up there,
prominent,
yeah. Which tends to make you think the movie is about him,
or that he's
has a bigger role.
Yeah, when you look up the movie, like in Google, I want to say it was when I looked it up earlier. And I'm doing it now.
Richard Pryor is like the main guy listed.
If you
on IMDb,
car wash IMDb, there he is. Just in the blurb that Google has, directed by Michael Schultz, starring
Richard Pryor
and Franklin Ajayi. Yeah, he's not in that much of a move.
He's more a cameo role. But granted, his little section in there adds a whole lot to the story.
Yeah, it really does. As do a lot of the people who do come in and out. I think probably the one that's one of the most memorable for me is the woman coming in with her son.
Yes. Yeah, she's from Beverly Hills.
She's a snooty Beverly Hills woman, and her son like ate something bad, and he's just barfing. everywhere.
Literally a projectile vomiting. All out the window,
and she, you know, she's like, get in here, clean this up, blah blah blah.
Like, well, yeah, she's more. Well, and, the fun thing is, she's more concerned about the barf on the paint job of the Mercedes rather than the fact her son may be dying of food poisoning or something.
The best part though is when she pulls away, and they're showing inside the car, and he just turns around and just projectile vomits all over the inside of the car and her.
Yes, as they're pulling out from being worried, it's like the final, you know, final revenge. Some other of the interesting things too is, you know, well, there is, I could say there is one little subplot that runs through this movie. During the course of the opening, you hear the voiceovers by the radio disc jockeys,
mm-hmm.
and they are announcing, okay, we have these last three tickets left to this big grand disco ball.
Right.
All right. One character there called TC. He's going to get these tickets, and this is kind of the running gag. Is every time they play a certain song, he has to run to the payphone and be the fifth caller in order to win these tickets. Well, the first two times, of course, he's totally thwarted either by he can't find any change, or someone else is using the payphone, and he has this. We find out later he's trying to get these tickets because He's madly in love with this girl who works in the diner across the street, and she's kind of on and off with him because she thinks he's just a frivolous jerk. And he is occasionally.
He's a loser who works in a car wash. I mean, that's kind of her thing.
Yeah, and he kind of realizes that she is, or she thinks this of him, but he's going to prove to her, no, I am not a total loser. I can do this. I can win those tickets. We can go to this ball. We can have a good time.
Yeah.
If he put as much effort into the car wash, he'd probably be number one employee.
I can't get past Elena's comment in the chat room because it's true. Franklin Ajay's afro was the best.
Best.
It really was. It was an amazing afro.
Mm-hmm.
It really was.
And that's kind of there is sort of a little sub story that runs through there, but it's kind of interesting how they go through the day, and you know these guys are just trying to get through and. The big one, I think the big, I guess, sort of semi-tragedies is, of course, the Ivan Dixon character, Lonnie, who's trying to be the big brother to these guys and keep this thing together.
There's a couple of tragedies, really, though, if you look at it. Because there's that one, and he's the one who, he's kind of the supervisor, and everybody kind of looks up to him in that, but the owner doesn't really treat him as such.
Right. He just treats him like another one of the working stiffs.
He counts on him mm-hmm. to keep the guys in line.
Well, he counts him to keep moving in the same direction.
Right. But he doesn't treat him like a supervisor. He doesn't pay him what he probably
deserves. Nobody in this car wash is paid very much.
No.
That's the whole storyline is these guys are working this nowhere job for minimum wage. They all got something they want to do or be. But they can't seem to ever break out of it.
Yeah.
Now, we know that there's a couple of them in there. We know that the TC wants to win the girl next door.
Right.
We know that one guy wants to go back to college and be something. We know that Abdullah wants to get out of this job and do something big with his life.
Right. He doesn't want to work for the man
anymore. He doesn't want to work for the man anymore. He wants to be somebody.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's changed his name to Abdullah.
Yeah, from Dwayne.
Yeah, his name's Dwayne. Everybody calls him Dwayne. There's a running joke in it that everybody calls him Dwayne, and they keep correcting him to Abdullah.
Yes, and he's got it on his locker. He scratched out Dwayne and wrote Abdullah on there. But he's the kind of the angry young man of the whole storyline. You know, he realizes he's going nowhere. He's frustrated as all get up, and he's letting it get to him. Well, all the others are kind of getting on him because of it.
Yeah.
He's the angry young man.
What's great is he's trying to, he's got a passion, he's got a cause, and these guys are kind of slackers, a number of them.
Make a big joke of it.
And they turn him into a joke. You know, mm-hmm. to them, he's the joke.
Yeah, serious all the time.
To him, they're the wastrels, they're the ones who are just ruining their lives, but they just think he's a joke. It's like, man, you're Dwayne.
Yes. What's this Abdullah stuff?
You've always
been
Dwayne. What's this Abdullah stuff?
Yeah, why are you so serious?
Right. Why so serious?
And you got the two brothers who have, you know, the showbiz aspirations. Yep. You know, they show off their dancing clothes that they're going to go on the big talent show, and they're just sure they're going to win.
And the one, because they're so damn talented. The one I recognize immediately as Otis Day.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately.
Yep.
It's like, that dude is awesome.
Yes, he's going places in show business. And it's these little storylines are running around in here about these basically poor working stiffs who nobody really cares about, whether they have any dreams or have aspirations. They're just trying to get through the day.
Yeah, there's a couple of points when it really seems to turn into, there are some serious beats that happen mm-hmm. through the movie. And I think one of them was the introduction of Lonnie,
yeah. We find out his backstory, yeah.
Well, when his kids show up mm-hmm. and we find out a lot more of his backstory, that he's been in prison, that he's kind of keeping it from his kids still look up to him, and he's trying to be a good father to them.
Yes. Yeah, when his parole officer shows up, he says, you know, why on me? I'm still working. I'm still doing everything. And the guy says, you know, it's nothing personal, but, you know, he takes it personal. Like, you don't trust me.
Right. Yeah, Lonnie's character is really cool because this is a guy who has a past. He did something wrong in the past. He never denies that he did something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But this is his. He is working toward redemption.
Mm-hmm.
He is trying to be a better person. I love the scene when he's talking to the owner and he's like, "Hey, you know, I've got these big plans. We can get a lot more cars through." And the guy's like, "Look, we don't have money to do that." You know.
Well, yeah, Mr. B is just too concerned about one getting his end wet with the clerk.
Yeah.
And, you know, not having his wife found out. Right. I mean, he's sort of just, I think the backstory for him was he inherited this thing, and he's just, you know, like himself, he's trapped there too, just keeping it running.
Yeah, yeah. And just the idea that he had really good ideas.
Mm-hmm.
We can take some of the extra space, we can have two bays, we can automate everything. Mm-hmm. You know, we can make this a really good and very profitable business if you just listen to me.
Yes.
The guy that you're not going to listen to because I'm black, I'm one of your PM workers,
yes.
And I've got a history.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to listen to me.
Well, I don't think the problem is Mr. B listens to anybody because he's so distracted by everything. He's got his slacker son, pothead son, who's trying to be one of the brothers. And
they just kind of put up with him.
Yes, that guy was totally, as the character was totally clueless.
Yeah,
apparently he didn't listen to the John Lennon song. If you go quoting Chairman Mao, no one's going to like you anyhow.
Yeah, because that guy needed some help.
That guy needed a reality check. And of course, it doesn't help to blow a few bowls in the morning too, to nothing like that to start your day off.
Yeah, yeah, because he did that. Then there was the big guy who got with a hooker,
mm-hmm.
and that was just an odd little scene in there.
Mm-hmm.
The clerk who,
yes, who found her true love.
Yeah, the douchebag player guy.
Yes, I saw those guys in the 70s.
Hey, baby, I've got some aqua velva. You wanna come ride in my car? It was bad.
It was her head terrible. Spins.
And she was all googly-eyed for him.
Yes, I no longer have to pork big fat guys. Somebody handsome, take me away from all of this. Yes, she was living the dream.
Yeah, yeah. Elena said the scene with Lonnie's kids when he tells them to be careful bike riding in traffic, it reminded her of when she was a kid getting on the bike and just going off for hours.
Mm-hmm.
That was neat.
Yeah, those kids could actually... It would be weird.
People don't do that anymore.
Kids could ride in downtown Los Angeles on their bikes, and the only thing they had to worry about is being hit by a car.
Right.
Yeah, that's the least of your worries now.
Yeah, people don't really go out. Kids don't go outside much anymore. I don't see kids running around
Oh, well, I still see him on my block quite a bit.
Yeah,
I don't but see it, him. But you would never see that in downtown LA.
Yeah,
today.
Holden runs a crew out here.
Okay, well that makes sense. That's. But I just know, I know they took the basketball hoop down where we used to always play at the parish we used to always play at. You know.
Yeah.
People just don't. I mean, they don't have a place for people to just go and do things anymore. You know. So.
Yeah, it's. This movie is very. In some ways, it is very set in its time. But, like I said, there were a lot of similarities just to the feel of Clerks mm-hmm. for this in here. And it really came down to, what it came down to for me was the ending.
Mm-hmm. That's and, where it all yeah, starts popping together.
Yeah, things really start pulling together and all these little storylines either get resolved or start actually coming together and coalescing. First, Abdullah gets fired.
Right.
And he gets run out basically because he's just a bad influence. He doesn't gel well with everybody else. It's like, yeah, you're trying to make a point. Yeah, you're trying to be a better person. But you are a disruptive force because you're not like everybody else now.
Yeah, and you keep showing up late, too.
Well, that, too. Yeah. And the, what it really, when it really kind of clicked for me was, I remember at one point in Clerks, Kevin Smith had a scene that he shot. I think he even shot it. He wrote it, but I think he even shot it. With the last scene of the movie was Dante's closing up. After Randall leaves, Dante's cashing out, and the door opens, and Randall says, "I'll be right there," and he looks up, and he gets shot, mm-hmm. killed, dead, movie's over. And the producer was like, yeah, after the fact, the distributor was like, You want to change that?
Yeah, it's too much of a downer ending.
You don't want that to be your ending. It's not what your movie is about. When Abdullah comes back and Lonnie's the only one there.
Yeah, he's closing up.
He's closing up the shop, and he comes in with a gun, and I'm thinking, is this where Kevin Smith got the idea? Holy crap! Because it had been so long since I had seen this movie, and I don't know that I ever watched it all the way to the end. I didn't remember how it resolved. So
yeah,
I was thinking.
But the thing is.
And the great thing was, is it really could have gone either way.
Right. But the fun thing is about it is when Abdullah comes into the gun, instantly in Lonnie's eyes, he sees, that's me. That's me doing the same thing years ago, something stupid that just destroyed my life and got me trapped here.
Yeah.
And he sees himself instantly in Abdullah. And he realizes,
and
okay, this is happening all over again.
That was awesome because, you know, at first I thought Abdullah's just going to be this idiot now who is, you know, he's gonna gun his friend down for a couple of bucks in the change drawer. But when Lonnie turns it around and talks him down and is like, "Hey, man, I've been here.
You
don't want to go down this path.
Yeah, I've been there.
This is not what you want." And he takes the gun from him, and then they hug.
Yeah.
And that was like, that was such a cool way to end the movie. It really was.
Yeah, that's kind of the only, you know, kind of semi-upbeat part of the story.
Because there's a lot of, there are a couple of upbeat moments. TC actually gets the girl. He gets the girl, and they drive off together. Mm-hmm. Actually, he gets in, and he drives off in her car. Mm-hmm. But the cowboy
Scruggs gets tossed out of his house because he has a social disease that he's been worried about all day.
He didn't come home the night before, and he's sure he's got a social disease. And the one guy he's talking to, he's like, yeah, you just need to go back and just tell her, woman, I was out. I'm back. It's all good.
It don't work.
But, no, it was... There was a lot of fun moments where you see people who are, like, giving terrible advice. And you know it's terrible. And the characters know it's terrible, yet they still try to do it.
Yes, George Carlin never... The taxi driver, George Carlin, never does find the girl who's stiffed in the 20 bucks.
Yeah,
and we see her, go off and, again, walk off into the night. You know what's going to happen to her next? We never do find out.
Right, right. Yeah, Carlin's character is kind of weird. I mean, it was funny, but it seemed like it was a little bit out of place.
Yeah, well,
it seemed like they wanted Carlin.
Well, you know, yeah, they wanted to do something as an anchor.
They wanted to do something with Carlin. I mean,
I thought his kid was kind of a disappointment because he's not in enough in there to make a joke about this whole thing.
And he's really not Carlin.
Right.
He's not an intelligent character with a statement. He's just this goofball.
Yeah.
And it, I mean, for that, it was disappointing.
Well, for as much high billing he got.
Well, yeah, between him and Pryor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, jeez.
Yeah, we can almost cut that. There was an interesting thing as I read, is there is two versions of this movie. There's a theatric release, and then there's a TV release, where there's a whole bunch of people who ended up on the cutting room floor. Like Danny DeVito had a scene in here, one of his first, and it ended up on the cutting room floor. And there's a whole bunch of other actors that had these little cameo roles.
There's a list here on IMDb. Mm-hmm. Brooke Adams, Benny Baker, Louis Lillian, Danny Tucker, and Sonny Woods all appeared in the movie, but their scenes were all deleted.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that TV release has not ever been released as a DVD yet, or as any other medium. It's only theatrical release is out there. And some of the actors in here, Ivan Dixon, who plays the character of Lonnie, he had a long run. He had a pretty much a standing role in the TV series Hogan's Heroes.
Yep,
he played the character Kinchlum. Who was the radio operator in Stalag 13. He is...
was Stalag 17?
17, excuse me.
17.
17, yeah. Excuse me. I'm thinking of the play. He left after about the fifth year because he was... felt he was being a little patronized by some of the other actors. And
that's not a big surprise.
Well, again, a black actor in this mid-60s. Everything was... could have been gone either way, but anyway, when he left the series, he pretty much said he was never going to take another role that was stereotypical for a black actor. Well, that kind of froze him out of a lot of roles for a long time. But he launched into a directorial career, which was very successful, and worked in several TV and movie roles as a director. And he was successful with that. Yes, his filmography is very impressive.
46 directors
credits,
mentions on IMDb.
Yes.
The A-Team.
And flipping through this.
Yes.
This is pretty awesome. I mean, as far back as the Bill Cosby Show in 1970.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, he started his directorial career in the 70s.
The Mod Squad.
Mm-hmm.
He did...
The Waltons, of all things.
Wow.
A number of episodes. 7 episodes of The Waltons. An episode of Starsky and Hutch. Quincy, Hardy Boy, Nancy Drew Mysteries.
All the way up to the time of
Bionic his... Bionic Woman?
Yes, all the way up to the time of his death in 2008, he was active.
Wow. Well, they show the last one here is 19... Oh, that's his acting is 91. And directing his last one is in 93. But yeah, I mean, he had a hell of a career.
Yes, he did. So it was a very full one. And he was also very active in the Civil Rights Movement. He was also very active in the into the support for black actors in Hollywood. Very active in that community, too. I mean, the man had an incredible career.
Here's an interesting tidbit from IMDb. From Richard Pryor. As Daddy Rich, head evangelist of the Church of Divine Economic Spirituality, which I thought was an awesome church name. Though Pryor has been frequently top-billed in promotional materials for this movie, his appearance in the ensemble of performances is only a cameo. Pryor said in his autobiography, Pryor Convictions and Other Life Sentences, that he felt that the public were misled into believing that he had a bigger part in this movie. And that's
very true.
Pryor also admitted being high during the shoot by saying,
yes.
Quote, on the set of Car Wash, I was too coked out to know any better, unquote.
Yes, but that he was a very inspired performance for the time he was on there.
It was, yeah. Another thing that cracked me up, and actually kind of leads back to the Clerks thing, DVD and home video cassette covers claim this to be the first ever disco movie. This is due to the movie's soundtrack, as it's not a disco dance picture as such. One of the DVD covers declares that it is the, quote, first disco slacker movie.
Could be, yes. It predates Clerks by several decades. Ah, that's a fun thing.
A good 15 years.
This movie, even though it was not a commercial success, It was, the soundtrack was a huge hit.
Was it?
Yes. Yeah. It had three of the songs were number one on the charts.
And they were original to the soundtrack?
And original to the soundtrack.
Oh, interesting.
The theme song, Car Wash, has become like a 70s anthem.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's okay. Very cool.
Anybody from who grew up in the 70s can pretty much sing the Car Wash theme.
Mm-hmm.
The movie was also heavily influenced the movie Shark Tale. The animated movie.
Yes.
They use, well, it happens at a whale wash.
Okay.
And Will Smith's character is one of the fish that work in the whale wash, and they actually do the song Car Wash as part of it.
That's funny. I haven't seen Shark Tale. And it's got Scorsese and De Niro in it. Seen that already.
It does.
Right out loud.
Yeah, so all in all, it's a good movie, but I think if you know what you're in for, you'll enjoy it better. Don't expect the plot. Don't expect seeing like an Apatow movie where everybody's going to be filthy for an hour and 20 minutes, and then there's going to be this heartwarming twist at the end. Because it's not anything like that.
Right. Pacing in this movie is very strange. There is no pacing. It's just like a bunch of scenes that have been cut together.
Yes.
Just sit back and just let it happen.
Yeah, it's just a series of vignettes. It's a slice of life. It takes place during the course of 10 hours in the day that this car wash is open.
Oh, yes. And the car wash, it really was a car wash.
Yes.
It was not. It's not a set or a prop. It was a working car wash.
Oh, you mean they filmed it at an actual car wash?
Yes. Yeah. Which was there, I think, up into the 1980s before it was demolished.
Nice.
The Deluxe Car Wash really did exist. So they didn't have to work very hard to make props.
I would imagine not. But, you know, that even in and of itself at that time was, they were doing a lot of, you know, on-site shooting. Mm-hmm. What stuff that's probably the norm now more than ever. That was like a lot of
stuff.
Well,
the thing is, by today's standard, this would be considered an indie film.
Yes.
I mean, again, the location, the unusual script, the type of filming they were using. But this was made by a major motion. This was made by a major company, Universal.
Yeah. But, in the 70s, people, now maybe I'm wrong here.
Well, yeah,
after Easy Rider, everybody wanted to jump on the indie films.
Wanted to jump on they wanted to get out of the Hollywood system.
Yeah.
No more, you know, backlot productions. It was all on location. It was with, you know, more handheld cameras.
Right.
With not so many big name actors.
Yeah.
And again, experiments and types of script and story were a little more common.
That's cool.
Until they became the norm, and then now everybody's going back the other way.
Are they going back to backlots?
Well, again, some of that because, again, cost of location shooting can be a bit ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Unless you're an indie film and like your Woody Allen, you just use your apartment over
right.
and over and over.
Right. No, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so we had made reference to it earlier.
Woody Allen?
No.
Oh.
There's one line where Dwayne, one of the characters, is messing with Lindy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to use a word here that is a quote that I normally would not ever use, but it's appropriate because of the back and forth. And Dwayne says, "Will you please get out of my face, you sorry-looking faggot?" And Lindy turns around and says, "Who you calling sorry-looking?" Then Dwayne says, can't y'all see she ain't, well, and everybody laughs at him. Then Dwayne says, can't y'all see that she ain't funny? And then and then the laughter stops and he says, she's just another poor example of how the system is destroying our men. And Lindy turns around and says, honey, I'm more man than you'll ever be and more woman than you'll ever get. And it stops. Everything just stops when he says that. And it's like, done. This conversation is over. And it was great. I mean, it was such a perfect slam dunk for that scene. And apparently, that line was reused in Rent.
Mm. Oh, was it?
I don't know. That's in the trivia.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the other thing, too, that they brought up in the show notes. This movie was more popular overseas than it was in the United States. Because,
really?
Yes, because, again, it was a look at a slice of American life that no one really talked about. You know, how the underclass really exists. And for a lot of Europeans, this was an eye-opener and somewhat more interesting than the typical fare that they had been getting. And it resonated with the European audiences more than it did with American audiences.
That happens a lot, actually, I think. European audiences will gobble up an independent American film faster than Americans tend to.
On a subject that most mainstream filmgoers would not really care to be reminded of.
Yeah, yeah.
Or be interested in.
Right. It's not escapism. The film is not an escape.
Mm-hmm. No.
So, yeah.
No, these are the guys you see when you take your car to the car wash.
Right.
And you ever wonder about them.
And right. Sometimes you don't want to know.
Right.
White guilt.
Yes.
I have nothing else to say.
No, I think we covered it pretty much in this movie.
Did we miss anything?
I don't think so. I was just going to say, and then I bit my tongue, my white guilt comes from having seen Transformers 2. But
I've heard that that's...
that's where a lot of white guilt, I think, stems from that movie having been made. So
I've been led to believe that. I have never seen it. I've avoided it. Mostly
you
because
did the right thing.
Mostly because of Adam's... it's not protestations, but his evangelism about how wonderful that movie is and how it is so great. And if it's any time he sees it on, he will watch it till the end. And...
Are we talking about the same Adam? The one that we both know personally? The one
yes.
who's on this podcast?
Yes.
Hey, Jim,
I'm going to have to talk with that lad.
Well, you might be able to do that next week.
All right.
So
sweet.
hopefully we'll be able to make that happen.
Sweet.
All right. So next time we are going to talk about Stand By Me,
mm-hmm.
and then we are going to talk about Bad News Bears,
the
original
one.
The
yes.
original one. And one little bit of business, if you are still listening, Scott from Backseat Quickies is in about a month doing a 24-hour video game marathon. And he's doing it to raise money for like a children's ward at a local hospital up in Canada. So they him and Sam and a few other people are getting together, and they're going to play video games for 24 hours, and they're looking for people to donate. So if you have a chance, if you have some funds now that you've earmarked for Sausage Fest, go ahead. It's all right. Sausage Fest is 2 months, so you got time to save back up.
Yep.
And Kids with Cancer is a very good cause, and we still want to support the boobs with cancer, and we will do that later. But support Kids with Cancer. Scott and his friends are doing a good thing. And we very much want to support him. If you're looking for the link, just check out this week's Backseat Quickies episode, and you can find the link there for where to donate.
And if you can't give money, for God's sakes, go to the Red Cross and donate some platelets. People with cancer can use those really bad.
Yep, yep.
It'll only cost you about 90 minutes and a little pain.
And not much pain.
No.
Typically, you get a cookie and some orange juice.
Oh, they'll give you all the cookies and orange juice you want while you're hooked up there.
Yeah.
In fact, they'll fawn all over you.
What if I just want to go for the cookies and the orange juice, but not donate?
Tell them you're there with a friend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my buddy's in there. I'm kind of hungry. Can I get one?
They'll be happy to do it as long as you stay hooked up.
I know. I'm just being...
I just got a tattoo. Sorry. Can't give.
So you don't have to give money. You can also give yourself.
Yes.
Try to bring the misanthropic attitude back to this podcast, you know. Oh. Less of the generosity, more of the misanthropy.
It's never really left.
Okay.
I mean, for God's sakes, it's breast cancer. The tagline is putting our meat where the pink is.
That's
seriously.
An excellent point.
It's never really gone anywhere. All right. With that, we are done. See you next time. If you are listening on YouTube, thanks for hanging out. And check us out at BackseatProducers.com.